So let's continue. First, we consider the simplest case, a stationary slow motion of a Bingham fluid. Here everything for making this conclusion that problem is correctly stated we already have. It's just a reminder and one more example of Leon Stampakia lemma. We have rational inequality, we know that our problem is formulated in this form. Now trial functions in this space of solenoidal functions, and we know that the problem can be reformulated in terms of this functional, which contains quadratic and this linear part, this linear growth part, and just this problem by standard coercivity, low semi-continuity theory, possesses a minimizer, then variational inequality also possesses solution because it is equivalent in view of Leon Stampakia lemma. So here it is not that many to say, but this is the simplest case. Maybe also just a useful reminder, it is also easy to prove here uniqueness of solution. Assume the opposite, that we have two different solutions of this variational inequality, U1 and U2, both of them belong to the necessary class. Then we write variational inequality for U1, where V is a trial function, and we select as this trial function U2. And here we write it for U2 and select V1. Then we add both these inequalities, and immediately we obtain this, which comes to the conclusion that U1 equals U2. It's rather elementary, but just to refresh something. But there is another topic which we must discuss in connection with existence, because some problems in plasticity, in particular the problems which we considered on the previous lecture, like Henke model, they seriously differ in one more point, which is related to existence also. But before going to this matter, I want to consider a viscoplastic fluid and introduce some quantities which has clear physical meaning for this viscoplastic fluid. And after that, we will return to perfect plasticity. So I assume that we have this problem, Bingham fluid, this integral variational inequality, but here we put some parameter, lambda. This is a positive parameter which somehow scales the right-hand side. And now we consider solutions depending on this lambda. And let's see what will happen. Again, we know that this variational inequality is equivalent to this variational problem, where in the right-hand side you have this lambda. We define this quantity, which we denote lambda star. It is infimum of all such type expressions which is taken over solenoidal fields, and such f that are normalized by this relation. So this means that integral of f multiplied by v dx is 1. This quantity plays a very important role in viscoplasticity related to fluids, and then perfect plasticity related to solids. But you will see it, the meaning is a bit different. First of all, it is clear that if this F is not zero, then such a quantity is always positive. Indeed, assume the opposite. Assume that this guy, which is here in the right-hand side, tends to zero, that we find a sequence of functions such that this goes to zero. Then we apply Korn's inequality. By Korn's inequality, it means that this norm will go to zero. But if this norm goes to zero, this means that this must go to zero, which contradicts to that it is one. So it is non-zero. Also, this relation, this definition, implies such type inequality, which you can find in many, many publications related to plasticity, where they represent this safe load in such a form. Indeed, if this FV is negative, then it is obvious that this holds. If it is positive, then we normalize V and construct V bar like this. And then automatically we have this. And then we just substitute it here, because then it comes into the admissible set. And when we substitute it here, you have this V bar here, it is greater than lambda star, then I return to my original variables. You have this factor here, then I take this guy here and obtain this relation. So this is another form. What is the meaning of this parameter lambda? Let's take this energy functional. We just rewrote it from the previous transparency. But now I decompose this last part in such a form. I multiply and divide by lambda, and then I take this guy and replace it using this one. So instead of this integral, I insert into my functional this one. And what I will have? When I do this, this is the same, this is the same. But here you have this. So this term, I can put this square root here, and then this will be the factor 1 minus lambda divided by lambda star. So if lambda is in that interval as before, this expression is positive, is non-negative. Because here there will be a factor in front of this guy, there here will be factor 1 minus lambda divided by lambda star. And lambda is here. What it means? It means that if lambda is inside this interval, then the minimizer of this energy functional is zero. Because it must satisfy zero boundary conditions. On the other hand, from here it follows that epsilon of this function will be zero. So there is no other way to judge but to say that it is zero. What this means? It means that if this parameter in which you scale force, in which you scale external load, is smaller than this critical parameter lambda star, then solution is zero. In spite of the fact that you apply some load, but there is no reaction. So the media is not moving. It is exactly what you have in some of these two-spaced tubes. When to squeeze it, to let it go out, you must apply some force, unless nothing happens. This is the phenomenon of viscoplastic, typical phenomenon of viscoplastic fluid. And for this reason, this lambda star is sometimes called the limit load parameter. For this limit load parameter, we can easily derive estimate from below, applying the following argumentation. Let we have some tensor tau such that I remind that we always believe that our tensors are deviatoric, that they do not have spherical parts, so I can write it like this. And then we take this functional, which is actually energy, and whatever tau like this I take, I always have this, because this tau is bounded by this constant. So by Cauchy inequality, I immediately see that it always holds. So if it always holds, then when I take supremum over this part, using these admissible functions, it is exactly the same if I will take, I take infimum, of course, here. And here I take infimum. And this quantity is some lower bound for lambda star. Moreover, if I take supremum here with respect to all tau and write it like this, then, of course, I have this evident relation. So this is the lambda star as we defined it. And this is its lower bound as we defined it in a different form. Inequality always holds, but for many types of K, it was proved that this guy coincides with that one. In mechanics, these are often called static and kinematic coefficients, and it is one of the theorems in plastic analysis is to prove that static and kinematic limit or safe loads, they coincide on, with this or that yield condition. But let us now look at this matter not from the viewpoint of fluids, but from the viewpoints of Henke plasticity. What this parameter, which role it plays in models related to Henke plasticity. This is somehow a subject which I avoided in previous lectures, but in general it cannot be avoided. We have this functional related to Henke plasticity, this dual, where I just remind that this is the definition of this main energy term, which is defined as a characteristic function of the von Mises set of admissible functions. Usually, such type restrictions are applied. Of course, we can a little bit, but it is not that important now. But when we represented Haar-Karman principle, there was one thing which I missed, and you did not notice it. But formally, you may ask me at that time the question that Haar-Karman variational principle is defined as to minimize this quadratic type, or this concave, better to say, concave functional like this on this set. But it was never proved and never studied that maybe this set is empty. And this is not just a formal question. It is a very serious thing. Because in real situations this set can be empty. Let us look at this set. What is K? K, it is like a ball. It is a set defined by pointwise conditions which contains only such type tensors which moduluses are bounded pointwise. And this is the set of functions which satisfy equilibrium equations. It comes from nowhere that these two sets necessarily have common points. Moreover, it might happen that they have not. This hyperplane and this ball, which intersection we denote by this, they may not intersect at all. And in this case, these convex analysis theorems cannot help because set is empty. This is, of course, a well-known phenomenon in elastic plasticity. And usually in mechanical papers, they implement this condition that which is even a bit stronger, which says that in mathematical language, this condition says that this intersection has internal points. So it has such type points around which you can put small ball, and this ball also will be inside this this intersection. But for mathematical analysis, this is not very convenient. And what this condition one means? We have this L, this function of generated by external loads. And if this one holds, so such type sigma zero exists, then of course this linear function is represented as integral over this sigma zero multiplied by strain tensor, just because it is the definition of QL. Yeah? And then I rewrite it in this form, decompose into deviatoric and trace. This part vanishes because in our cases divergence is zero. And here I replace this guy by this one with some small epsilon. So actually what this assumption I means? It means that for this L holds this one with some lambda which is greater than one. Why? Because of this epsilon. So we come from this mechanical mechanical observations and mechanical necessity. We come again to quite similar formulation. And quite analogously in mechanics of solids, they study these constructions, which are, as I said, called kinematic and static coefficients. But usually here, these coefficients, they are called not limit load, but safe load, by the reasons which I will explain you now. Now, let's take Henke plasticity functional, primal one, which is a functional with linear growth. So you see we have now this quadratic term with divergence, and this guy G0, which has such a form. We studied it on the previous lecture, and you see it has linear growth. When modulus is large, then it behaves like this. It is easy to see that this integrant, this G0, this one, yeah, will be bigger or equal than this thing. Why? If it is this branch, it is simply equal. But if it is this one, when this eta is lesser, then this will be automatically lower. It is easy to understand if remember the picture of this function. It is quadratic up to the critical point and then linear. And this function is simply this linear extended to the whole x. And for this reason, we always have this relation. Due to this fact, I can write this estimate for the energy functional, that energy will be bigger or equal than this quantity, where this guy comes from here, and this generates this, because I took integral over the whole omega. But this is constant, which does not play essential role. But what plays essential role is that now I implement this safe or limit load condition to this linear functional. This linear functional is bounded due to this condition. And due to this fact, I have this. And you see that we have this inequality. You see that if lambda is bigger than 1, then we are guaranteed that the functional will be coercive, which is one of the key properties of the energy. But if not, we are not guaranteed. And if you think a little bit, it is a quite natural situation. You have energy functional which grows linearly. Then you compare it with the function which grows linearly. If that rate of linear growth, which you have in the energy functional, is smaller, at least along some directions, then the growth dictated by this constant, then it might happen that such type energy function is simply unbounded from below. And then the variational problem for such type loads is senseless. There is nothing to find. It cannot be any minimizer because infimum is simply minus infinity, and you can find a sequence of functions which tends to minus infinity. It reflects quite a clear physical property that if you have media with such type physical relations, which says you that not all stresses are possible, only some of them. And moreover, only such stresses which are inside the ball. Then you cannot evade that whatever force you apply to such type media, then this will be a reasonable problem. If you apply too high force, then it is not a matter of classical or generalized solution. There is simply no one. The problem is senseless on much more preliminary level, because the energy functional may be unbounded. And for this reason, this quantity in plastic analysis, it is called safe load. So your loads must be such that they do not exceed this safe load. Otherwise, there is nothing to study. Yeah, and this is the small observation that it can be easily demonstrated that in some sense vice versa, that if we have an assumption that our a priori assumption that our energy is bounded from below, so that we do not have this bad situation, then we can formally deduce that the load, the external load, must satisfy this limit load condition. Indeed, assume that we have this, where this kappa is some finite infimum. Assume that this holds. So assume that our L is, in a sense, right, correct. then we can always represent this functional in such a form where delta is some parameter and W is some trial function which vanishes at the boundary. Yeah? And then if we write this inequality, simply this is just algebraic manipulation. I divide it once by this delta, and then I tend delta to plus infinity. This goes away, this goes away, this goes away. Divergence of W is zero, and what remains is here. This remains. And if you remember that this G0 has this form, so if I substitute here, you will see that this part does not play essential role because it will be divided by delta. But this will play. And exactly by passing to limit as delta tends to plus infinity, from here you will immediately obtain this safe load condition. So in some sense it is necessary and sufficient condition for that your functional is okay and it is coercive. Now I think we will have time. We proceed to another topic. I want to show you how existence results are proved using fixed point theorems. And this will be for this Bingham model with convective term. And these type proofs are based on Le Rayshawder theorem, which is the most advanced among fixed point theorems. And this theorem says you that if we have a Banach space X and we have a subspace S in this X, and we consider a mapping, this is some operator which generates you mapping from U under some lambda, you get back another U. Theorem says that this mapping has at least one fixed point, and fixed point is the element which possesses such a remarkable property. That if I substitute it here, make all these calculations, then I obtain the same here. Three conditions which must be satisfied to apply this theory. First, and probably most important, is that this mapping must be compact. It, in other words, it must possess such properties that if it transfers weakly converging sequence to strongly converging sequence. Another one is that there is no solutions of this equation on the boundary of this set for all lambda. And the last one, which is in a simplified form here, that for lambda equals zero, this equation is uniquely solvable. For us, this form is sufficient. So now we have this model of Bingham fluid. We have this variational inequality with convective term. We want to, if we want to apply Le Rayshawder theorem, we first must formally organize this mapping T. So what we do, we redefine these functions. It is convenient to avoid these boundary conditions, this U0. Therefore, I just subtract it, and these functions bar, U bar and V bar, they vanish at the boundary, so they satisfy homogeneous boundary conditions. If I make this change of variables and put U bar and V bar, well, then this will be switched to this. You see, instead of U, I have now UI plus U0I, and here is the same instead of you. But here, instead of these guys, I have things which vanish at the boundary. So far, nothing serious happened, only we have new variables. And now we recall that this difference is a solenoidal function, and we integrate by parts. We put derivatives from one term to other terms, and when I put it here, I have divergence which vanishes, and then I have this term. So when I apply this change to the previous equation, I have this one. So now we more or less have what we wanted. Now let's look at this in the following form. Here we have our exact solution, u bar. Now u bar, it is exact solution up to the function which satisfies boundary conditions. So we may call it exact solution. And now we look at it like this. We take some u bar here and fix it. And look at this right hand side as on external load in some sense. So we consider this u now independently of this one. This representation gives you an idea of how this t will be organized. I take this, substitute here, solve this variational inequality, get new one. Take this new one, substitute here, solve this equation, get another one. So maybe it is more transparent if we rewrite it now like this. Now, what I said verbally is done by implementing this W. So W is the predecessor of U. And now the system is completely splitted and represented in this form. I have W, it is here. Here there is no W, here it is only this part which contains U. I solve this problem and I obtain U. And the difference, another difference, which is in this inequality being compared with the previous one, that I inserted here lambda. Of course, here there was no lambda. But now it is inserted here and here. But this main term, this is the main energy term which plays crucial stabilizing role in the whole analysis. This is a very important part. It, of course, is without lambda. So now, formally, our problem is this. Our original variational inequality can be written like this. And again, we refer to the theorem of equivalence between variational inequalities and variational problems, and we say, because here we can apply it, convective term does not exist here anymore. You see, we splitted it. So we can apply that lemma now and say that this is a variational problem with relatively good functional. Okay, it is non-linear, but it is a convex functional with all good properties. Yes, it has this term, but it can be treated like some external load or whatever additional term. But this problem is well stated. It possesses solution, unique solution for any lambda, We just proved that this solution is unique, but made this test. So now we will try to satisfy conditions of Lerche-Schauder theory. Let us assume that we have a sequence of these functions W, these predecessors, which weakly tend to W, and this sequence of numbers lambda, which tend to some lambda. Then it is clear that this holds, that this sequence is bounded. And now we will introduce two indexes. We need to extract two elements from this sequence. One is indexed by M, another indexed by K. And at first we do the following. We take this variational inequality, which has this lambda. You see lambda now is this lambda M. So it is associated with UM, with the function which was generated during this process on the step number M. But as a trial function, we take UK, and therefore this difference is here appeared. And also such type terms appear here, they appear here. And now we do the opposite, we change M and K. So we write equation for K and take as a trial function this M, and then we have quite similar variational inequality for UK. And then we sum both of them. It is clear that in this case, linear terms, after such type manipulation, they will go. And what we have is this one. Maybe okay, you can check, but of course it needs time to do this. Just I checked this morning. This like this. This will be after summing. We will have this form, which has this again the most interesting term, which will have terms with the difference between lambda m and lambda k. And these three terms, they are more or less easily estimated. They bring no problems. No, actually, these also will bring no problems. But with this, it is pretty trivial how to do. But with this, it is a little bit more complicated. But I will discuss. So I just colored them to underline that there are parts of this expression which are easily, which can be easily estimated, and others which need to be specially considered. So these two. And now what we have, oh, sorry, I missed integral or norm should be, so because relation related to the integral. So just want to show you the structure. I have this guy. If I take it and put it here, then it will be with the sign plus. And in opposite, all these guys I will put there. Yeah? Then this will be estimated from above by something. And what is this something? This is I1 plus I2 plus I3, where I1 is this one, the first term, which contains this difference between lambda m and lambda k, and then you have this thing. It is very easy to estimate it, because I apply Cauchy inequality, and I get this. This is something bounded, and this is also bounded. Remember the first inequality from which we have started. So it is some global constant, which I will not distinguish, and as usually mathematicians do, all the constants which do not depend on something, they denote by the same letter. So since here we investigate dependence with respect to K and M, so all constants which are independent will be denoted by one with C. Okay, then E2 is this one, but it is also the same story, because even stronger norm is uniformly bounded. Even L2 norm of this guy is bounded. So, okay, it is, of course, is bounded as well. So we have quite simple. Here everything is obvious, yeah, also bounded. So the first three, as I promised, they are easy. Now E4. E4 is this one. And here, the only maybe note which we need, that we apply, of course, I take this and this. This is estimated by the gradient. And this, you see that it is this pair. It will be here L4 norm. But in dimensions 2 and 3, we have embedding of Sobolev space into L4. And this embedding is even compact. So everything is OK. And this is bounded. And for E4, we have the same estimate. Now the very last term. Here it is a little bit more tricky, and I will try to explain in more details. So this term, which was artificially created, and why it was artificially created, it was created in order to have a symmetric this difference in that one, because otherwise there was difference one contained lambda m, another contained lambda k. So it was artificially created, this term E5. But it has this view. And to understand how we estimate it, I remind that first we apply, we can look at it like this. We have this y here is not index. It is number of vector. So we have a collection of vectors. So we have, this is the scalar product of vectors. And we have this version of Cauchy inequality, where yi, if you look here, it mimics this structure. And here I is the component of vector A. But with this guy, it is simple, because it will be, by this derivative, it will be gradient. But it is interesting what will be here. And here, we just formally write this as follows, and calculate this modulus. It will be this guy squared plus this guy squared minus this by this. And we see that we have this expression. Now I substitute instead of A this one, instead of AI this one, instead of B this and this, and I obtain this. You see this term where we have this power 4, this power 4, and this power 2. But as I said, embedding of H1 to L4 is compact. And this means that we have weakly converging sequence in H1, but in L4 it will be strongly converging sequence. So in terms of L4, this will be a Cauchy sequence, and moreover it will have, of course, one limit, because it's a complete space. So recalling this fact, we see that this simply goes to zero, because this tends to this and this, they tend to the same in the power 4. And here we again have the same in the power 4, but with the factor 2. So it is zero. The limit of this term will be zero. Then we remember now that all previous terms, they had this factor, lambda m minus lambda k, which tends to zero. So a1, a2, n3, a4, and a5, as k and m tends to zero, they tend to zero. What comes out of this? It comes out of this that in this inequality, in the left-hand side, there was this guy, which was bounded by a1 plus a2 plus, it goes to zero. We apply Korn's inequality. Korn's inequality says us, and in this case it is even the simplest Korn inequality because we have zero boundary conditions, that in this case this will go to zero. But this is exactly what we want. We started from the fact that we had weakly converging sequence. Sorry, I'm a bit out of time. The sequence is fundamental in H1. So the first and main item of the Larre-Schauder theorem we have verified. I will verify tomorrow.